Persistence pays great dividends to me. 18 publishers turned down Richard Bach's book, his 10,000-word story about a soaring seagull, before Macmillan finally published it in 1970. By 1975, Jonathan Livingston Seagull had sold more than 7 million copies in the United States alone. This is Dr. Herbert L. Byerly, Dean of the University of Healing here in Capitol, California, with a thought for today. Persistence pays great dividends to me. Sure did well by Richard Bach. Can you imagine 7 million copies in just 5 years? 7 million copies of his book, which is quite good. And if he earned only maybe 3 cents a book, or whatever he earns per book, you know. So let's say 1 cent a book, that'd be 7 million cents. And you move the decimal point over two places, and what do you got? You got $700,000. And so 3 7 21, that'd be $2,100,000 if it's 3 cents a book. Whatever the royalty is that he's being paid on it. Now, that's pretty good. That's pretty good for a book that chased him. He was not going to pay any attention to the book. But the word Jonathan Livingston Seagull was echoing in his mind, and he had to write it down. He had to listen to it. And then right in the middle of it, it disappeared. For a period of about 7 years, Jonathan Livingston Seagull just sat there doing nothing. And then it came again, and he followed him. Now, why do you think it came in the first place? Well, in the first place, he likes flying. He likes aeronautics. He likes things like that. So he was thinking of the seagull as a pilot. He's thinking of the seagull as a human being, you know. They needed food like, you know, a seagull would, and like people would. And he thought of the seagull in this human aspect. But the concept within him had a greater quality to it than just the human quality. And it took him 7 years to get used to the idea that he was ready to think of it from a different point of view. And so the story continues. And they came to him as he was flying on the far cliff. You see, a whole new element was now there. If Richard had been awake and alert, the book could have continued. But he was a human working from the human point of view. And after 7 years of many trials and many tribulations, losing his family and everything else, that is, into divorce and what have you, he just felt at the bottom of the rung. And when he was at the bottom of his mental thinking, of his spiritual thinking, then he let go. Then the story could come through to him again. It could come through to him in his purity and goodness. From his divine nature, it could come through. Not that some outside force is doing this. It is just his own inner self, which says, you're not ready to understand this yet. You're not ready to take this yet. When you're ready, that means you're going to get your bloated nothingness out of the way of the divine circuits, you know. And so apparently that's what he did. Now, persistence pays great dividends. He persisted. He kept it in his mind and heart. What thoughts do we keep in our mind and our heart that we would like to appreciate? We were just working on the concept of our neighbors down here. The neighbor has children, and the children are very noisy with their motorcycles and their motorbikes and things like that, and driving them, you know, around the neighborhood. And the other neighbor was so bothered by it, he put up two great big containers to block the noise out. And these containers cost a considerable amount of money. But he had use for them anyhow. So that didn't change anything. That just made the kids noisier. And when the father was approached about the kids being noisy and said, what do you think about those all those noisy kids down there, not knowing who the kids were? He said, huh, those are my kids. They're staying out of trouble doing those things. Staying out of trouble, disturbing the neighbors. First role of a parent is to keep children in order, to teach them balance, to teach them harmony, to teach them to be good neighbors. Love your neighbor like yourself. Wow, where'd that come from? That's right out of the Christian teachings. That's right out of the number one. I've come to give you, not to destroy the Old Testament, but to give you two new commandments. Two new commandments. Love your neighbor like yourself. And then for them to treat their neighbor like that is certainly an unchristian act, if you can call it that. Now, we are not judging that. We're not saying, but we are saying that a parent is responsible for their children. When the kids go bad, it's the parent's fault. The parents did not take the time with them to do it. But it was just a bad seed. Well, certainly it's a bad seed as yours, you know. And it's how you trained them and how you handled them. And how much love did you invest in your child as the child was growing up, you know. So, persistence pays great dividends to me. I think every parent who can be proud of their child is proud of their child because they invested persistence with that child. They continually told the child, be good to your neighbor. Be good to these people who are misusing you. Be good to these people who are giving you a hard time. Be good to the world, because that's what you have to do. Treat the world like you'd like to be treated. You want somebody to come in your toy box and take your toys? Then you don't take anybody else's. You want somebody to come in your toy box and break your toys and mess them up? Well, then you don't do that to anybody else. It's simple. Real simple. Nothing complex, nothing esoteric beyond the normal means of understanding, but very simple. However, that means that has to be your concept too. For you to teach something, you have to believe it. If you don't believe in mathematics, and you're teaching mathematics, the students know it right away. And they say, yeah, I don't care about mathematics. Even though you may know it well enough to teach it, if you don't have the right attitude in it, the people that you teach will not have a great respect for mathematics. The same goes for anything. Persistence pays great dividends. Now, Richard Bach was a good man, always was a good man. And he wrote well, and he loved flying. And he wrote books on flying, which were okay, but not very successful. You know, they were good. I've read them. They were very nice. I enjoyed them very much. And he never made much money. But he didn't make much money because he didn't think he was worth it. He didn't have a high value for himself. Well, his divine inside of him said, Richard, come on, raise your sights. Think higher of yourself. Come on now, think higher. Well, he wouldn't and couldn't. As I say, he lost his family, his wife, and he got a divorce, and children separated, and so forth. And his whole life was sort of tumbly-tumbly. And all this time, the voice in him was saying, Richard, you're a good man. Richard, believe in yourself. Richard, go for it. Richard, you're okay. You know, but, oh, dear me, oh, sad me, oh, poor me, you know. And so, as long as he had this attitude, the divine in him could not flow out with the purity of the rest of Jonathan Livingston Seagull. And until he was able to like himself and start appreciating who he was, start appreciating that hey, I'm okay, yeah, okay, it's past, and I go on from here. Until he could do that, he had nothing. And the moment he could do that, then he had everything. Now, when have you faced something like that? When have I faced something like that? When have we lacked belief in ourselves? And lacking belief in ourselves, we did not move forward in the direction we could. I don't mean trying it. I just mean moving forward in the direction we could. When we believe in ourselves, we are not doing it for somebody else. When we believe in ourselves, we are believing in ourselves because we are good people. We are nice people. We don't have to tell other people that. Other people know by looking at us whether we're nice people or not. If you go up to a dog who's growling and showing his teeth, you doubt that that's a nice dog, you know? It may be a perfectly nice dog for his master and everybody else, but you doubt that it'd be a nice dog for you. So you are the only one that matters. If that dog bites you, then you're bit. Whether that dog is the most gentle dog in the world. But why does he bite you? Because you don't like yourself. Burglars go into people's houses, and the first thing they do is they take dog treats along. And they give dog goodies to the dogs, and the dogs are their buddies. The dogs are their friends. They're not stupid. You make friend with your enemy. Agree with your adversary quickly, and give him a doggy treat. And he won't chase you. He won't be unhappy with you. He won't bite you. And the same with kids. If a burglar is going into a house and just the kids are there, he says to the kids, "Oh, your dad sent me over to do something or other, you know." So you get their confidence first. And with their confidence, they'll even help you loot the house. But it's true. This is a negative point of view, but it just shows that no matter whether your goal is good or bad, according to society's point of view, if you handle it right, you can do anything. And people do. Why do very rich people be so rich when they do bad things to get rich, you know? When they do bad things to get rich. And the richness of being rich has nothing to do with whether they're bad or good. It has only to do with their attitude about abundance. Now, what about our bodies? Our bodies don't really care whether they're healthy or sick. Our bodies will do whatever our mind tells it to do. And if our mind says we live in our ideal spirit, mind, and body, whole and perfect all the time, then that's what it is. Now, persistence pays off in these things. What sort of thought do you have about your body? Do you spend more time moaning about your body and its unhappiness, or glorifying the body and saying, "Oh, I feel so good. Oh, man, I feel so wonderful. I can fly," you know? You ever think that? You ever think that you can fly? "Oh, sure. Oh, sure. Oh, sure. Oh, sure." Well, all the time. All the time think that. You know, "I can fly. I can fly." You know, Peter Pan. What the heck? That's no joke. That's a child cartoon, so to speak, but it's true. It's true. Just like Pygmalion. With the proper type of training, she became a gracious lady, but she always was a gracious lady. She always was a lady who was in charge of her environment and her world, and that she was able to be in charge of a more high society world, that was a proven thing too. Persistence pays off in anything we want to do. Richard Bach became a multi-millionaire in the time when multi-millionaires were fabulous. And then he invested in the stock market with his broker, and the broker unwisely put all his eggs in one basket, and kaplatch, the basket went out. And Richard got some bills back from the company, and he said, "The broker, put some money in my account." He said, "You're broke." He said, the market lost it for you." What? You see, he got the money without thinking about the money. And then he just gave it to somebody to invest for him, which was good. But he didn't really make sure that the guy invested it as wisely as he could. And the guy wasn't cheating him, I'm sure. But the thing is, he didn't have any money. So then Richard had to take the money that was coming in from his books and stuff when it came in annually or whatever it was, and start rethinking how to use it. So then he quick got out his pen and pencil or his computer or whatever it was and wrote some new books, which were all right, but they were not up to the par of Jonathan and Illusions, because those were inspired books. The other books he wrote were money books. He merely wanted to capitalize on his name and sell the books and have enough money to pay his bills and get more coming in. And so he capitalized on his name, and people thought, oh, Jonathan, Richard Bach, wow, yes, oh, I'm buying that book, you know. And it was pleasant, but it was nothing wonderful. So, you see, persistence pays. Now, if Richard Bach, instead of being gaga over the fact that he's got so much money, that he's so famous and so rich, would go into meditation, you know, go into introspection, and listen to the divine within, and say, hey, divine within, we did pretty good with Jonathan and Illusions. Now, what's next? You know, I'm ready. And the divine within would say, just cool it, relax, just cool it. I'll tell you when you're ready. And the best way to get ready is to like yourself. Not go off and show off to other people, but just like yourself and enjoy yourself. And so, right now, Richard's going through that phase of his life, of liking himself and not showing off. He's learning humility, modesty. He's learning all these important things that are going to prepare him for the divine within him to shower his life with even greater abundance than he ever knew before. Now, whether it'll be a book, quite likely it could be, or whether it'll be something else, the name Richard Bach will emerge again as something very special. He can live his whole life on the two books that he wrote there, and, you know, have done more than a zillion, dillion people have ever done. But in him is that desire that says, I got more things to share. I got more ideas to give you. But he has to have that humility. The humility that says, it is not I, but the Father within. It is the divine within me that does these things. The divine within me is sharing these things. Not my humanness, but the divine. So as he persistently lets go and lets God, lets go and lets the divine, then he will have it. And he will have it. Because I say so. No, he will have it because he is a great guy. And I love him. Thank you for sharing with me this wonderful day. I love you, I love you, I love you, and I see all of you revealed beautifully now.
Thank you.